Now you're at the Checkpoint Central of the Universe at Hopkins. So I'm curious, you know, of course we heard about the CD274 amplification thing in Hodgkin lymphoma. That's supposedly why they're, but then there were reports, Andy, that this was found rarely in a bunch of other solid tumors. And I think they had like 12 patients or something that were treated and a bunch of them responded. So is that really playing out that way?
Yeah, so far, those data are very sparse. Like you said, it's a really rare population of solid tumor patients that have amplification of the gene that encodes PD-L1, CD274. But it seems like those patients do respond very well to checkpoint inhibitors, at least in that small patient population.
Ian, what about this issue that he brings up of, you know, maybe not right away, but just more theoretically, an ATM mutation, at least that was seen in the liquid biopsy. Any thoughts about that and the theoretical relevance of a PARP inhibitor?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the building on the, you know, the proven benefits of PARP inhibitors with the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations, where clearly there's a synthetic lethality that happens because the tumors are dependent upon PARP-mediated DNA repair because their homologous recombination pathway through BRCA1 and 2 is deficient. You know, there's certainly interest in whether other genes involved in DNA repair may confer sensitivity to PARP inhibitors. In breast cancer, there are trials going on now to see whether PARP sensitivity is mediated when you have things like ATM mutations. I don't know what the data are in prostate cancer yet, if they have actual clinical data on the sensitivity when you have a mutation like that. But again, I think certainly mechanistically, it makes sense to explore it. And, you know, at least in breast cancer, that's being done in the setting of a clinical trial.
I was mentioning that, you know, a couple of times now we've gotten people from different disciplines together, and it's always great because now I can just turn to the person sitting next to you and say, what's the answer to his question?
So there's an interesting feature here. In fact, this person has three ATM mutations, not just one. So two of them are frame shifts, and the allele frequencies are 1.5% and 1.0%. So that suggests that they're somatic. And then the third mutation is a splice site mutation, and the allele frequency of that one is 42%. Whenever you see an allele frequency that is between 40% and 60%, this is virtually always a germline mutation. And so when I look at this report, I'm thinking to myself, this guy has a germline ATM mutation. We would have to prove it by doing a saliva sample or a blood sample. But with an allele frequency of 42%, it's almost certain. And then the second issue is that if we believe that he has a microsatellite instability, multiple genes, including the ATM gene, have microsatellite tracks within them, so that the microsatellite instability can cause a secondary mutation in the ATM gene, which is not a driver, it's a passenger, and it's a consequence of the MSI high status, not a driver.
Wow, that is really interesting. But just to get a more fundamental question, we'll get into this later when you go through the data, but do we know about response to PARP inhibitors with, you know, patients' prostate cancer and germline ATM?
So the responses to PARP inhibitors with ATM mutations are much, much more limited, less than 10% of the time. We do occasionally see profound responses, but in prostate cancer, most of the profound and durable responses to PARP inhibitors are in BRCA1 and BRCA2 patients.
So Andy, you know, we'll talk later about the setup at Sarah Cannon and how you're reaching out to oncologists like this, but I'm sure you're hearing about tons of EGFR mutations. What's R1068? Is that an activating mutation you would think about a TKI in?
It's one that we'd have to do a little bit more digging on, because as you mentioned, it's not one that comes to top of mind when you think of EGFRs. But I will say that it is a premature stop codon there at position 1068. Usually, premature stop codons, depending on the protein and depending on where it exists in the protein, cause truncation and in some cases loss of function. So I'd have to dig a little deeper on that to see if that's something that would be activating or not. I'll point out, though, that this report also has mutations in IDH1, FGFR2, other genes that are known to be mutated in cancers and have molecules that are in development. So this is, as was mentioned earlier, a very complex case that I think opens up a lot of opportunities, especially from a clinical trial point of view.
Yeah, this patient could be potentially involved in five different kinds of trials, theoretically. Who knows? Maybe he'll respond and be able to get different kinds of therapies.